Okay. Thank you, Larissa and Anna, for your work. And Marcia Kissel is joining us as part of the Oral History Project. Julie Katz will be here shortly. And both of them represent this very valued group of people who came to Johnstown for whatever reason and then further nourished the local Jewish community. So thanks, Marcia, for joining in.
My pleasure.
Do you want to ask Kelsey King?
All right. So how did you come to Johnstown?
I was a student at UPJ. I visited the campus with a friend of mine and fell in love with the campus right away. Didn't look for any other schools. I knew that's where I wanted to be. And so I was accepted there. And about the first week I was on campus, I met the man who would become my husband. And so I never got to leave. I just stayed.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, so that's how you came to Johnstown, and what year was that?
1970.
Okay, and so what did you do in Johnstown? Like, what was your profession, and where did you live?
I worked for a year at Sally Cadillac, but I graduated with a degree in education, so I started teaching in 1975, okay. And I taught in the Greater Johnstown School District until I retired in 2010.
Okay. And what neighborhood did you live in? Did you live in Westmont, or did you live in another neighborhood?
Stony Creek Township briefly, a couple of years, then Moxham for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I've been in Southmont ever since. So that was in 1986 we moved to Southmont.
Okay. And what synagogue did you attend?
The merger was in the process when I came to town. And so I was basically in this building the whole time.
Okay.
Were there other Jewish students up at Johnstown when you were there?
There was actually a Hillel when I was there.
Really?
There was. And I joined it, and I'd say maybe for the first semester, maybe the whole first year, I attended meetings, and then I'm not sure if it folded or if I did. I didn't go after that, so I don't know. It wasn't big. There were maybe 10 of us that went to the first couple of meetings. So.
And apropos to that, the local B'nai B'rith would take lox and bagel up to Pitt Johnstown's campus. Mm. Maybe this is before 1970. Mm. And they'd welcome the students like on a Sunday morning or something like that.
I never knew about that, but I could have just missed the information. Or, you know, as a freshman, I might have not been tuned into things. But I do remember there were several families from this congregation that would invite students into their homes for the high holidays. And I do remember spending one holiday, I'm not sure which one, I think it was Rosh Hashanah, with the Needle family.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. So, can you just tell us about your impressions of the Jewish community, just living here and working here, and also, you know, coming from somewhere else and coming into the community?
Sure. I'd have to contrast it with the Chambersburg community, which is really all I knew. And the Chambersburg community at the time in 1970 was much smaller than here. So to me, this was a very large congregation with lots and lots of people. Now the two congregations are close to equal in size. This one is still bigger, but not a lot bigger. I wasn't terribly active in my early years, but once we had, our daughter was born in 1981, and once she was born, I started attending more regularly. Mm-hmm. And I always said once that they were out of the house, I would then devote some time to being a volunteer, and they are out of the house, and I'm here a lot now. A lot.
You're being modest. Everyone's quite involved. Really.
I remember my synagogue in Chambersburg was so small, and my grandfather was one of the founding members of that synagogue, and he was the cantor there. And on our high holidays, he was the singer. That's all we had. Mm-hmm. When I came here and heard the choir with the organ and a conductor, I felt like I should have bought a ticket to come to the concert. It was just awe-inspiring. It was beautiful, beautiful music. And that was one of my first and fondest impressions of this synagogue, was just how inspiring the music was. because I have a musical background through my grandfather and my mother, but I was really impressed by that, that there was so much effort put into rehearsals and music, and that was quite an experience. And then also the pageantry of the High Holidays was, again, in my Chambersburg synagogue, there were very few people that were considered the leaders because it was so small. But here, when the leaders of the community would gather and they would parade down the aisle with the Torah scrolls on the High Holidays, if you weren't religious when you came in, you would be after you saw that. It was very inspiring.
And it's probably just a little bit of a manifestation of a larger pool of people here than in Chambersburg. Even though Chambersburg is east, and when we go east, there are more populated areas, but Johnstown did have a critical mass that Chambersburg probably didn't have as big of post-World War II.
Right. I don't think the Chambersburg Synagogue ever had more than 40 members.
Yeah.
Plus some children. But Chambersburg, as small as it is, does still have a sort of active Sunday school where we have nothing here anymore.
Because there's some young people
in that
area.
They're younger, but on the flip side, they have no money, and they're on the edge of closing.
You were saying.
Right on that. Yeah, they're having a big 100th anniversary celebration toward the end of May, and part of the reason they're doing it is just as a fundraiser to try to maybe eke out another year if they can. So that's really sad.
So what is your role in the congregation? Then, or can you tell us like all the roles that you've had and like up until now?
Well, my official title is treasurer. I'm also, we used to have an organization called Sisterhood, and all the women belonged to Sisterhood, and Barry's mother twisted my arm many years ago, and I wasn't an active Sisterhood member at the time, and she knew how to get things done, and she said, "Do you think you'd have enough time to just collect the envelopes for our dues?" And this years and years ago, and I said, "All right, I can do that." So that was my first job here, other than being a parent and all the things that we did with our children. And so I collected dues money that year, and then of course the next year she was sure I would do that again, and she just kind of kept finding other little jobs for me to do. So bless her heart. But I'm glad she did, because through her I became an active member in the congregation, where before I had just come in and said my prayers and gone out. And because of her insistence that I help out a little bit, I got to know more people and became friends with people, and now I'm firmly cemented here. So to answer your question, the Sisterhood has since ceased to exist, but I still collect dues, and I still pay for all the things we used to pay for. We just don't any longer have meetings. Mm-hmm. Also, 6 months out of the year, when Barbara Rosenberg's away, I take care of the Jewish Family Services checkbook and everything that comes through that organization within the synagogue. Somehow I ended up, this was your father's fault, I believe. I'm going to have to talk to the Verdell family here. Jewish Family Services, I was invited to join that because I was one of the few people still young enough to get around. And we have a movie every month during the winter months. And when the people who had been in charge of it weren't here anymore, guess who took that over? So now I order the movies and set up we always have lox and bagels, and I make sure all of that is taken care of. When I saw a hole in one of our Torah scroll covers, I took it home and fixed it. And when we had some work done in one of the rooms, and this was before we had Tammy and her husband, nobody was cleaning the room. Like the ceiling was patched, but the room was a mess. So I came in and did it. When there's something that needs to be done, I do it.
And one person can really make a difference. And since Marcia mentioned Tammy, she is our secretary here, Tammy Fiffick, and she does just an outstanding job. And her husband, Jim Fiffick, is also quite helpful, as is their daughter, Gabby. And we're grateful to the family for their role here.
And I have to add, when someone asks me what Tammy's job is, I just sort of say she's our everything, because she does all the secretarial work, she does all the bookkeeping work, she does all the janitorial work, except whatever her husband helps with. She organizes our trip. She does everything, absolutely everything. So she and I have become quite close, and we rely on each other all the time. Between Tammy and Julie and I, we kind of keep the place running, I guess.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit about the Seder and what the Jewish community does for either the Jews in Johnstown that want to be a part of Passover, but not have something in their home, or for the general community.
Right, typically, Passover is celebrated in the home, but not everybody's capable to do a full meal, nor a lot of people prefer the company of others rather than just being home with your spouse. It's gone through several hands since I've been active, but Tammy pretty much handles the Seder now. She knows how to get the orders taken. She knows how to set everything up. We have in some years opened it to the public by extending invitations through the churches in the area. Mm-hmm. And we did have over 100 people at one or two of the Seders, and over half of them were non-Jews. Mm-hmm. And we've since stopped advertising it as we have fewer and fewer workers here now. But we had about 35 or 40 people this year, and half of them were not Jewish. People know we have the Seder available, and they enjoy it, and they come. So it's a good community outreach event as well as a religious event for us.
You guys know each other, correct?
Oh, you know,
Larissa Duncan. Julie Katz.
I'm thinking of another Julie that I know.
Oh.
But
that's
okay.
And this is Anna. Oh, yeah, you said.
Yeah.
Well, this is Julie Katz, who does an awful lot of work. She's a trustee here at the temple, and she's been most involved with a lot of the initiatives, works very closely with Marcia, who we just interrupted. Marcia talking. She was up to 1961 on her childhood in Chambersburg.
You remember when those first teeth come in? Long before 61, but anyway. All right.
You were talking about
the Seder, but
we're
pretty much done with Seder.
Actually, why don't you talk a little bit about, ask Julie about her upbringing, what brought her to Johnstown.
Okay. So, how did you come to Johnstown since you were not a native?
We were living in Toronto, and my husband he's a physician. He was working many hours.
Mm-hmm.
And this opportunity came up. He met some people at a conference, and we came to visit, liked it, thought we'd only be here a couple of years, and 26 some years later, here we are.
Okay. So how did you get involved with the congregation?
Oh, I was involved pretty much from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
since we moved here. That was always very important to us, to be part of the congregation, part of the Jewish community. So pretty much from the start.
How did you start out? Did you start out and it was the sisterhood? Yeah,
I wasn't an active member at that time when you came.
No, I guess I joined the we began by becoming members of the synagogue. And then I became a member of the board, and from there eventually became president of the board, and then now I'm chairman of the board. So, yeah.
Okay. Tell us about living here in Johnstown and, in the community, and just any impressions that you have, any stories.
Well, I do remember when we were moving here, initially when we were moving here, and as I said, it was very important to us that there be a Jewish community and an active Jewish community. So I remember the group that my husband was joining organized a dinner with about 20 or 30 members of the community over at Serpent Turf, so we got to meet a lot of members of the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. We moved here. The Jewish community was big. It was active. We had a huge Sunday school. We had a religious school. We had 2 days a week. I think we had Hebrew school. Sunday, we had Sunday school. We had classes that were full upstairs and downstairs. Mm-hmm. We had a huge amount of people at our services.
We did.
People going all the way back into the social hall. And we used to have receptions, like for our high holidays. We had receptions downstairs. We had so many people
and they were
coming to services.
I remember my first Rosh Hashanah reception I went to. I was just amazed at all the food that there was, just Jewish food, and like you wouldn't believe.
And everyone participated. You were in charge of the Rosh Hashanah reception, which I was for a number of years, and you would call people, and everyone would be willing to bring something, whether it be honey cake or nuts or fruit or wine or punch or chocolate or whatever. It was like a feast.
It really was
a feast.
It was so elaborate.
And, unfortunately, as the years have gone by, people have left either, one way or another. Either they moved on, retired, moved to Florida, moved to California, moved to Arizona, or have left
passed away.
Mm-hmm. And most of the children are gone, and they're not coming back.
Yeah, and what Julie's saying, it's a little bit of a double whammy for smaller Jewish communities, because the kids don't necessarily come back. There are more Johnstown Jews living in Pittsburgh than are here in Johnstown. But then as the seniors age, they may want to be around the family. Now, some of them, because of Pittsburgh's proximity, can still stay in Johnstown. Mm-hmm. And some have. But others, if their kids are further away, then it's led these seniors further away, which these seniors enjoy being with the family, but they've been wrenched away from places that they grew up.
Yeah, that's been the saddest thing for me, really has, because we had such a vibrant Jewish community when we moved here, and for a good number of years afterwards. So,
and then all of a sudden it just seemed like a huge number of they just left. And there was no one left here, but
was it just because they
the
just
youngsters?
Was it just because they just reached retirement, or
some were young enough they had other professional opportunities, and they took their young children with them and left us?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, that's right. The mills. Yeah. The mills of Petrarchus.
Yeah.
Lots of families.
And then
like
demographically, there's so few people that were born between 1929 and 1946, and as a result, there aren't that many people. And this is in big cities also, Jewishly, and in general community. So you feel that more acutely here. There's more people in their 90s than there in their 80s. Mm-hmm. There are more people in their 60s than there are in their 80s or 90s here in Johnstown. So in terms of the kids, your kids growing up here, and they grew up with much smaller numbers of Jewish kids. How was it for them growing up?
My children had about 5 or 6 in their studies in their Hebrew school and Sunday school classes. There were 5 or 6 other children. And they both were bar and bat mitzvahed through here. And like many children of that generation, they've drifted away, and they're not active anymore in any faith. They're just, that's often the case, I guess.
Was it easy for Ben growing up as a Jew here in Johnstown? The kids accepting?
The kids were accepting, yeah. There were 3 kids. In his school year, there were 3 kids. And he was able to do, he was one of the last classes that was able to do Hebrew school, Sunday school, confirmation, bar mitzvah, obviously. So after his year, I don't know if there may have been one more confirmation class afterwards. I'm not even sure about that.
It has. It was
quite
down
fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Marcia and Julie represent this little bit of a boomlet of some kids that were born in the 1990s, I guess.
Okay.
Because, for example, in the 1970s, I had 2 sisters. They were the only Jewish kids their age in their particular grade. So it had already started to thin out.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting what you're saying about the 1990s. You felt it was still somewhat grand.
There were 3 in his class. I think there were 2 or 3 in the class above him. and another two or three in the class above that. So it was like, oh, yeah.
And they were merging classes by then, weren't they? Grades somewhat? Not so much?
A little bit.
I know that happened.
A little bit.
Some years, yes, and some no. My kids are about 10 years older than Julie's son.
A little bit.
How old is Ben?
He was 1996. He was born in 96.
Yeah. So mine are 10 and 15 years older.
Yeah.
When my daughter's old.
You must have been very young.
She was a child bride. She got married at 12.
Seriously?
Well, if you reverse the numbers. Yeah, I was young when I think about it now. But, Hillary's 37 in 2 months.
How did you guys find moving to Johnstown, even without the Jewish community? Is it a cliquish area? Is it an easy area? Well, David is from Portage, so you right. knew some people, and you went mm-hmm. to college here.
Right. So I knew the synagogue was here. I didn't have to look for a town with a synagogue. We just, my husband-to-be, started working right before I graduated from college, and so we didn't plan to stay, but it, like you said, Julie, it just sort of happened. I can't say I loved Johnstown at first. I was happy with the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. I wasn't so much happy with the town. But now, if anybody around me dare say anything negative about Johnstown, I let them have it. I am fully a Johnstowner now. But I think it just took me a while to get acclimated. Johnstown is so different from Chambersburg, even there. Mm-hmm. Even though the two towns aren't that far apart, they're ethnically and mm-hmm. economically, they're different in so many ways. And it just took me a while to adjust. That has nothing to do with what you're asking.
How about you, Julie?
I did really have a lot. Well, first of all, when we moved here, I had to go to school for a year. So I was going back and forth to Pittsburgh for a year. So,
law school?
You had that little.
Where did you finish up at Pitt?
No, I finished in Toronto, but I had to take a year. When I came, they wouldn't let me write the bar unless I took some classes in U.S. law. So I had to go to Pitt for a year, and then I was able to take the bar.
During the day, you just drove down and back? Or?
Yeah, it was the worst winter. 93.
Blizzard of 93.
I remember. Worst winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the one. It was horrible. But plus, when we moved here, there was a very vibrant newcomers club. And things were happening in Johnstown.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't hard. People would take me to a newcomers club meeting and then start meeting people. And so it wasn't really
a Jewish newcomers club?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it was just a general.
Where did you guys live? Here in Westmont?
Yeah. We always lived here. Mm-hmm.
Where we are now.
Mm-hmm. Well, we lived in a hospital apartment for a couple of months while they were finishing our house. But yeah. Mm-hmm. We haven't moved.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And tell them a little bit about the Hanukkah party that Francine has sometimes, which is lovely.
I can't.
Oh, you haven't been there?
I don't think so.
No, the Hanukkah party, it's been a few years since she's had it, but she would have a Christmas for the Jews, I guess. And so every Christmas Eve, whether it was Hanukkah or not, she would have a party for the entire Jewish community, everyone would bring some, and the Indians. So the Jews and the Indians would come.
Okay.
Yeah, because they don't celebrate Christmas.
Okay.
And we had some very good food. But she hasn't done that in a couple of years. She's done, for the past few years, she does break the fast at her house. Mm-hmm. She's done Passover Seder at her house for the community, or a lot of the community. Not everyone goes, but a lot of the community.
And we've had some members who have done that over the years. Paul and Rita Glosser used to open up their home on New Year's Day all the time for the Jewish community. Fred Glosser talked about the farm that they had at the Crescent that the Jewish community was welcome to attend different picnics.
That was before my time.
Of course.
Did you have a practice here in Johnstown? Or?
I did. For a couple of years. I worked for someone for a couple of years. I had a practice for a couple of years, and I worked for a judge for a couple of years.
Okay. Was there anything interesting about that, or And then just kind of, no.
This is ordinary. Really not. Okay.
How about JFS? Why don't you tell the ladies about that and Kate? Because it's a way for us to keep connected with maybe the people who can't get out as much, or we kind of make them feel nice around the holidays.
Right. JFS stands for Jewish Family Services, mm-hmm. and it's an organization that I guess our main focus is to make sure that there's some sort of activity going on with the movies that I mentioned earlier, and for the people who are shut-ins. Barry's dad is usually our delivery man, and he'll take baskets of food for whatever holiday it is to all of the people that are in nursing homes or that are just kind of confined to their own homes. We have a social worker on staff that if we feel one of our members needs some sort of social work advice or whatever, we can contact her and have her go speak with them.
And it was started by Elmer Match. Do you remember when?
I think it already existed before I was here, or before I was active.
Maybe before you were active, but no, it started after we moved here. I definitely started after we moved here.
The early 90s, maybe,
or mid 90s, I think, or late mid to late 90s, I think. Yeah.
So we try to take care of. Of the seniors, the rabbi calls on people who can't get out to keep connected with them. So that way we feel we're providing some nourishment for the community.
Right. And at one point, when we did have an active Sunday school, the kids would go on Purim. We make these cookies are called hamantash, mm-hmm. they're little triangles. And the kids would actually bake hamantash, and we'd have a list of people, and the parents would take the kids to some of the houses or to some of the nursing homes, and the kids would actually deliver the cookies to our Jewish Family Service members. So
there's no.
Those days are gone, unfortunately, because we have no kids left, but that was a very nice thing that we used to do.
And there's no charge for any of those services. Oh. We've also used Jewish Family Service monies to help if there's a hardship, mm-hmm. that anybody's experiencing and they need to borrow some money or to just be given some money, mm-hmm. we have it available to them to help them in that way. So.
And we've also had to take care of people when they pass away. There's a couple of people. We have provisions for that in one of our cemeteries. So we try to take care of everybody from cradle to grave. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we haven't had a Jewish birth. Many years, or those kind of the youngest kid in town, I think, is Sarah.
Mm-hmm. Sophie.
So,
she's the last one.
Yes, because the other ones just left and never came back.
Right. Now, we do have a family in Bedford that comes on rare occasion because it's a long distance to bring two young children.
Yeah.
Whether or not they'll ever attempt to be an active family, I don't know. But they're connected.
Yeah, and Jewishly, even throughout history, even in the largest of cities, we've always been a qualitative people, not a quantitative people. So it's not the numbers that come around as long as some people come around. And of course, in a small community, there's less and less of that. But everybody is still valued regardless, obviously, if they come to the services or not.
Right. We've had services with as few as three people in attendance, and we still have a service.
Yeah, and we have about 40 or 45 for the High Holy Days.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess one of the questions we've been asking other people that seems, you know, like you've been talking about that already is, the future of the Jewish community here. And it seems like you probably think that it's not as big as it used to be, but do you see, what do you see for the future of the congregation, of the community at all, in any aspect?
We're on the 10-year plan at most.
Which means there will come a time where hopefully a handful of us are still alive and no longer have a functioning building. So I imagine at that point we'll either go elsewhere for a service or maybe we'll do something in our homes, which is often the way a lot of synagogues started out. I know mm-hmm. Chambersburg did, and I think here also, where they were meeting in homes until they were organized enough to be able to purchase a building. So, you know, maybe some year we'll buy a much smaller building, or, you know, we'll convert a house into a place that's our own, or we'll see who's still alive and living in town 10 years from now.
These are these two ladies wrestle with that question more than most of us.
Yeah.
They're here. I'm in Pittsburgh, so it's it's not as not in front of me all the time.
Right. You'll always have a place in Pittsburgh.
but here it's and we want to maintain the congregation because there are a lot of people that are still around that may not come around.
And our synagogue here has a very unusual situation as compared to Chambersburg. Chambersburg has a handful of people, but they're out of money.
Mm-hmm.
We have a tiny handful of people, but we have enough money to keep going. So we could fund the building, but there'd be nobody in it.
Okay. Yeah, someone else had mentioned that, but they said that there's the money, but not the people, whereas other people have the people, but not the money.
Right, right. I think that's more typical. Yeah, so many, even my sister's community in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, they just have a good number of people.
Tell them to come here.
But,
we had a member here who wanted to have some people from Greensburg drive out. You know?
In my sister's congregation, they just sold their building to a church, and they rent their own synagogue for Friday nights from the church that they sold to.
Yeah, there's more and more creativity being done in big cities and small to try to meet the needs. And, of course, the Jewish community is not unique to that. You see that in Greek Orthodox and other ethnic groups, no question. We like to say we're unique.
it's a strange situation. So one of the things we'll have to grapple with 10 years from now, if I still have a functioning brain, is what do we
do? Presuming you have a functioning brain.
It's shaking. I'm well aware. We have the money that we'll need to find a home for, and I'm sure it will be donated in some form to needy congregations or charitable organizations or whatever. But that's one of the things that we as board members will have to meet and discuss is what do we do with all of our books and our Torahs and our other religious artifacts and our dollars.
And we appreciate what you guys are doing on the memorialization of the community.
You.
Because our memory, and you saw that, you know, we have a lot of square footage devoted to the history here because it's important, at least from our point of view.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And we're glad to do it. Was there any other questions?
Anything else?
Anything you'd like to add?
Anything you'd like to ask?
No, I think... sure, yeah, please do.
You mentioned that the children now, or more like the teenage crowd, if you will, is losing the connection to the faith. Do you think there is a way to kind of harness that back?
For many of them, no. Do you think there is?
Looking at my own children, they're in the same place that I was when I was in my late 20s, early 30s. I wasn't particularly involved either. Mm. You know, maybe as they get older, they'll become drawn back to what they knew as children. But I think if you look at all the churches and all the mosques and all the temples, everybody, it's a phase we're in right now where religion is not as important as it was 50 years ago or, you know, 20 years ago.
So, and there are some kids that will go to college and they'll get involved with their Hillel or Chabad or whatever. And then they'll come out and they'll do the birthright trip to Israel, which I don't know if you've heard of it, but that's a trip that they offer to Jewish college-age students to learn about Israel. It's a free trip. They go for about a week or 10 days, and they get immersed in Israeli culture, and they come back, and they're rah, rah, rah. But then there are kids who go to college and completely separate from their Jewish identity. So it just depends
Yeah.
what...
And Julie's talking about, you know, now the kids have choices. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some kids that are choosing, you know, Jewish life in some some way, and it's maybe way more powerful mm-hmm. than even our own experiences mm-hmm. because it's an open society. This is what they want. There's not the level of anti-Semitism or even latent anti-Semitism mm-hmm. that we had as kids. These kids feel that they can express themselves. It's a little harder sometimes in the smaller community because, like my son, he met his girlfriend at the Jewish Bowling League in Pittsburgh. So they're not sitting in services, which mm-hmm. might not be as stimulating. So these kids, if they are gravitating to the big cities, they have a little more other avenues to express themselves. Mm-hmm. Here, it's a little harder.
And it's interesting. I always contrast. When I was raising my children, we observed the holidays. We came to Friday night services, but it wasn't the focal part of our daily lives in our home, in our house. My sister, on the other hand, is very close to Orthodox. Her husband is Orthodox. They have a very religious home. It's their entire lives. They don't go to a doctor that's not Jewish. They don't go to a store that's not run by Jewish people. All their neighbors are Jews, and their friends are all Jews, and they keep a kosher home, and they observe everything to the ninth. No, this is the New York sister.
Okay.
They observe everything to the ninth degree, and their children, who are now 21 and 25, could not wait to get away from that restrictive environment, and neither one of them are observant or religious. Yeah. So it seems like, you know, it doesn't matter if you're totally immersed mm-hmm. in it or if you just had a dusting of it. Either way, the children are free to pick.
Yeah. There's no common denominator here. Jewish mm-hmm. camping has been helpful for some people. The Israel experience, there's been over 300,000 young people been sent mm-hmm. to Israel on this birthright. So it's tremendous.
Yeah.
But it's not like they're all coming back and they're getting immersed in their communities necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you ever reach out, or are there any interest from the students at UPJ? Is there a Jewish community there?
We have a couple of professors there.
Okay.
And they always make sure that the students are aware when we have services and mm-hmm. they're invited and their invitations are extended.
And every so often we get, sometimes when there's a free meal, you'll get a couple of kids that will come. Like for Hanukkah parties, we had, a few years ago, we had Dr. Steve Stern, who's a psychology professor there, had sent something out. Mm-hmm. And so we did get some kids from there. And we have had programs at UPJ
okay.
with bagels and lox and cream cheese mm-hmm. and, on mm-hmm. there. They have like a day, I think, where they have different cultures or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the clubs. Mm-hmm. They gather the clubs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've done that. We participated mm-hmm. in that.
And we have a student at Hiram G. Andrews. Is that what it's called now?
I think so. Yeah.
And he's come here on his own. He found us. And he's a fairly active participant.
Oh, yeah. Who is that?
Charlie.
Oh, is that Charlie?
Charlie,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I Charlie's last name, but Charlie.
He comes Saturday mornings pretty often.
Yeah. So you just, we're here. We have a website. People who want to find us do. We get visitors that are passing through, people that are in town just for the weekend, and they'll frequently find us on the website, and they come for a Friday night. And,
yeah, we had someone a couple of weeks ago. We had a woman from Cleveland. Oh, you weren't here. It was Saturday morning. We had a woman from Cleveland was passing through, and she wanted to come for Yisker.
Oh, okay.
And so she would
sure. We'll get that. I mean, we like to say, is the tape still running? We're not a meek people. So, like, there's not a Jew who's wandering around the Kanawha Valley saying, geez, I wonder if there's a synagogue. they'll find us.
Right. If they want to find us, we are fine.
And if we hear of someone new to the community, we will reach out to them.
Okay.
And hopefully they will.
Yeah.
I was at the hospital not too long ago, and a doctor walked by with a yarmulke on his head, and it was someone I had never seen before. And I just walked right up to him and said, we have a synagogue here in town. And he said, I know, I've been spoken to before.
I think one must be the guy from Montreal, Dr. Larkin.
Perhaps.
Yeah,
it might have been.
Yeah, if a guy is walking around like that, then he's Jewish.
Right.
But the average Jew, you can't tell.
Right.
You know,
right. You have to have, yeah.
This guy's a locum, though, so he goes back home.
My dad saw him, not at the hospital, but at one physician's office.
Oh.
My dad saw a guy with a kippa.
So he has Sam's office, probably.
Okay, so yeah.
He has one, too.
Yeah.
But he commutes back and forth from Pittsburgh.
Oh.
Yeah. Because my dad said to the assistant, you know, it looks like you have a guy here who belongs to my church. They both laugh. Oh, yeah, he just comes in once every few weeks or something like that. Thank you so much, Larissa. I'm glad that you were part of it.
Thank you very much.
Tell Sophie you were part of this.
Yeah, she's in my Girl Scout troop.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Good.
Can I sign something?
Oh, yes.
Uh-oh.